Thank you for listening to the serialized podcast version of The Mark of a Druid, a fiction fantasy novel written and read by Rhonda R. Carpenter. I suggest that you start the story at the beginning, and to be sure that you get all of the episodes, go to themarkofadruid.com or rhondacarpenter.com. Episode 16. Chapter 24. Harm none? Easier said than done. When she opened her eyes, Andrea was in the shower. Eve heard the water running and noticed the fireplace had been turned on to warm the room. Lifting the phone from the night table, she dialed the office. It was Monday morning and she needed to check in. Beth answered and Eve made a quick conversation of it and laid back down. She didn't move until she heard the shower shut off, and then she sat up, waiting for Andrea to come out so she could get in. She needed a shower and some coffee. Andrea opened the door with a smile. It was as if she were the old Andrea, herself. "Hey, I'm starved," she said. "Want to get some breakfast? I could use another one of those huge waffles." Eve smiled back. "I'll be right out." The shower was hot, and the water felt wonderful. While she was there, she thought she heard Andrea on the phone. It sounded as if she were talking to Richard, and then her office. She pulled sandy hair back into a ponytail and slipped into jeans and a light blue t-shirt. The friends walked to the Waffle House. When they entered, there was a loud cry from across the tiny room. "Andrea, join us, please. We were hoping to see you." Andrea shrugged at Eve, and she nodded her approval. The friends sat in the booth opposite the couple, who were already making conversation. Andrea introduced Eve. "Patricia and R.J. Rolfing, this is Eve McCormick, my research partner." Patricia acted as if she'd known Eve forever. "Eve? So, how did you get that black eye? I hope it's not boyfriend trouble." Eve looked across the table at the 30-something woman, a brunette with big brown eyes that stared right through her. Patricia's face was sharply featured and flawless, even down to her perfect smile. Eve wondered what she did for a living. "Probably a model," Eve thought. "No, nothing that dramatic. I fell in the shower and, well, obviously proved my mother correct in calling me Grace when I was growing up." Laughter drifted from the table, and RJ asked, "So, Andrea, I didn't know you were doing research. What's the subject matter?"
"Well, actually, with recent events, I've decided to work with Eve's team. They've been at it for almost 5 years now." "Eve can really explain it better." Andrea grinned at her friend. Taking her cue, Eve continued, "The study is about reincarnation and cellular memory retention. It's our goal to collect scientific data in an effort to find out the truth. If we can, is there life after death?" Both RJ and Patricia's mouths dropped open. Eve was used to this kind of reception from people who asked her what her profession was. The waitress approached and broke the awkward silence and gave everyone a chance to order. Patricia was the first to speak afterward. "Eve, I take it you are funded. May I ask by whom?"
"Government grant and private investors."
"Why? Are you interested in making a donation?" Eve laughed when she said it, not truly being serious. Andrea kicked her under the table. Eve looked at Andrea, but Patricia continued, "I would love to be involved in a project like this. Here's my card. Call me next week and we can set up a meeting. I'd like to hear more about what you do." Eve took the card. The conversation lightened to unimportant chit-chat as though the four were all the best of friends. Then Andrea pushed her plate away with a sigh. "Well, guys, we have a tour to catch, and it's really nice to see you both again. Patricia, RJ, good luck on that second honeymoon," she said with a wink.
"Goodbye," Eve said. "I'll give you a call next week, Patricia. It was nice to meet you both."
Eve and Andrea paid their bill. They walked around the corner before Eve asked, "What tour?" Andrea looked up at her friend and laughed.
"You have no idea who you just asked for money, do you?"
"Nope. All money's green when you're trying to fund a research project."
"Why? Who are they?" That was Patricia and R.J. Rolfings. Eve looked at her, quirked an eyebrow, and said, "And who are they?" "Eve. Patricia Powers, the New York Times best-selling novelist. I'm sure you've heard of her book, The Power to Care." Eve nodded her understanding. "She writes the most compelling books. The woman is famous in her own right, and, well, R.J. is a multimillionaire."
"Really?"
Eve tapped her chin, thinking, "Yes, that man's always got his hands on something cutting edge. Patricia is an old client of mine. RJ's reputation, well, it speaks for itself. Did you see how he adores her? They've been married about a year." The smile on Eve's face stretched from ear to ear. Andrea fought back laughter. "You certainly know how to pick investors. She would be an interesting subject for regression." The wheels began spinning in Eve's mind. Patricia would make a good candidate for the project, she thought. She looked around. "So what tour are we taking, Andrea? I thought we would go to the top of the island and get a new perspective. Would you go buy some tapes while I go get our coats and rent a golf cart? I'll meet you right out in front of the hotel."
"Sure,"
Eve said, turning the corner and walking to the grocery store, where she picked up 2 3-packs of tapes, extra batteries, and 2 bottles of water. After paying, she walked to the front of the hotel. Andrea came out with their coats, notebooks, and the tape deck in her arms. They placed everything in the cart and drove off down the street, except for the whirl of the motor. It seemed they'd stepped back in time, driving the winding hills of Catalina. They could have been in an untamed land never before settled by humans. The rolling countryside stretched out lush and green. Not something you see every day in Los Angeles, Eve thought while they drove up the steep grade to the next hill. Eve had not told Andrea anything about the self-induced session last night. She was unsure how her mentor would react. Andrea seemed her old self. She hummed under her breath as the sunlight highlighted the bright red in her hair. Eve chose not to say anything. At least, not yet. "Eve, I think we should pull off the road and do some further regression work. What do you think? Would you like to pick up where we left off yesterday?" Damn, she couldn't wait any longer. "Yes, but I did some further exploration after you went to sleep last night. Maybe we should review it first." Eve shyly waited to see her mentor's reaction. The golf cart slowed to a crawl and pulled off the road next to a stand of towering birch trees. The ground was covered in clover, and bright yellow blooms were opening to the noonday sun. There was a clear view of the ocean. In the hazy distance, the outline of the Southern California coast was obvious. "Eve, what exactly did you do last night?" The tone of Andrea's voice was demanding, and the set of her shoulders seemed threatening. "Well, Andrea, I felt the need to look further into the problems Alian was facing with her sister, so I did some self-hypnosis. I would never have been able to go back to sleep without knowing what happened." With the notebook in her hand, Eve faced her. "I'll read it to you if you like." Andrea rounded on Eve, shaking with anger. "Eve, it can be dangerous to do self-regression. You know that. Why didn't you just wake me up?" In that moment, Eve felt like the novice student again being scolded by the teacher. "Andrea, I was very careful. I would think you, of all people, would understand. It would probably have played out as a dream if I had not done the regression. You have to admit, lately my dreams have been a little damn dangerous, all by themselves." Eve was not going to give any sign of weakness on this point. She held out her wrists for Andrea to see. "With or without you, these experiences are happening, and I have to find out why." Andrea snatched the notebook and stomped away, out into the clover, and plunked down on a boulder that rested in the field. Eve watched from the edge of the road as her mentor read. When Eve saw her close the notebook, she walked to her side and placed her hand on her friend's shoulder. Andrea cried softly. When she looked up at Eve, tears trickled down her cheeks. "Eve, it was so humiliating when Davith raped her. I didn't know what to do. She didn't know what to do. She was hurt, and she wanted to run to you. I mean, Alian. But she was afraid. Afraid of her sister's reaction. Andrea regained her composure and left Eve sitting on the boulder. Walking back to the cart, she retrieved the coats, tape recorder, and batteries. Eve tilted her face to the sun, closing her eyes. Bright yellow and red circles flashed behind her closed lids. The rays of the sun gave her a sense of renewal and warmth. Eve sensed Andrea's return. Her mentor cleared her throat. Let's get started. When Eve opened her eyes, the coats were stretched out on the ground. Andrea was placing a fresh tape in the recorder. Eve climbed down from the rock and stretched out on the coats. Andrea took a deep breath before speaking. Eve, you're right. I do understand. You have the right to find out everything you can. I just love you, and I don't want anything to happen to you. Will you please promise me you will not do self-regression again? I'll promise not to do self-regression. If you promise not to fall asleep when I need you. She teased with a grin. Yes, I promise. But Andrea, swear to me that you'll always tell me the truth? That you won't keep secrets? Nodding, Andrea sat down on the edge of the makeshift blanket and pressed record on the tape deck. Take a deep breath, Eve. Let's count down together, each number taking you 1 million times deeper than you've ever been before. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All the way down. Good. Eve felt her body shift into hypnosis. There was no tension. The feel of the earth under her back and the sun shining down around her body was like being hugged by God or Mother Earth, and she didn't care which. She drifted deeper and deeper, feeling completely accepted in those moments. She was one with every other living thing. Andrea's voice was soft and lulling. Eve, where are you now? Lying on the ground, not far from the dwelling, Alian entertained thoughts of retribution. She was carefully weighing her options. Alian fought an invisible internal battle over what she could do to Davith and Perig. How could Gilno be protected? There were only three options. First, challenge the attackers to open combat. It was her right. How she would love to strike the life from Davith's body. Then everyone would know about Athene's rape. Was there a way to avoid that? The side of Alian's mouth curled at the thought of the next option. She could secretly sew two dolls that looked like the cowards and stuff them with mandrake to increase the rapist's sexual desires. Then she could coat them with verbena, which would prevent the spineless bastards from ever achieving an erection again as long as they lived. The desire they would feel would be maddening. Then she would bury the charmed effigies under an oak tree, reciting the binding words of power repeated in sets of three, to, and fro. Search and seek, a love to quench the burning need, one thought to think, one driving force, yet mind and body yield only remorse. From between their legs no seed shall leak. With manhood denied, no sons are spawned. Neither name is carried on. The dolls would never see the light of day again, nor for the rest of their pathetic lives would Davith or Perig be able to stiffen the meat that hung between their legs. Alian giggled while she toyed with the thoughts of torturing the boys. Then she remembered the oath to harm none with her knowledge or powers. It was truly for her protection that she held true to her vow. What you do comes back to you 100-fold or more. She had seen it happen many times, and it was true that both good acts and bad, they always came back. The third choice was to use the law. But for that, she first needed to find out what the law on rape was from Xavier the Brehan. He was an expert in the laws of her people. She could question him generally and see if there was any way to avenge the damage done without anyone knowing about it. That was probably her best option, but she wanted to see them suffer. She wanted to watch them crumble and die. Her own cruel thoughts terrified her. She was a druidess of the Standing Stones, She was sworn to harm none. Alian was torn and needed to take action. But what should she do? I think I should find out all I can before I do anything, she thought. She walked to the village. Davith and Perig stood at the gates. But before she reached them, they had slithered back into the shadows, avoiding her at all costs. Alian strolled, taking her time. There was no need to draw undue attention to herself. As she passed through the gates, she searched for the tall man with the streak of gray in his dark hair. When she spotted Xavier standing with the smith, Tarlok, a short, round man with his always present leather apron, she slowed her pace. They seemed to be in a heated discussion. Alian stood at the corner, just out of sight, until they had finished. Xavier strutted away. Alian trotted around the building onto the opposite side so that it would not look as if she were following him. Slowing to a walk, she stepped up and greeted him. Good morning. He smiled at the young druidess. Alian of the red hair, you have grown into a remarkable woman. How long has it been since we have spoken? She lowered her eyes in an almost flirting motion. It seems forever, Xavier. Would you have time to talk to me now? I have some questions about the law. His eyes sparkled, and he placed his hand on her shoulder, leading her to his lodge. When they entered, her eyes slowly adjusted to the dimness of the room. His dwelling's furnishings were very rich. The best of everything was given to the Brihan. Each family was responsible for his well-being, and he was afforded every luxury. The thickest furs, the best stores of meat, the first harvest grains, and the finest clothing from the most experienced weavers. He worked with his hands for nothing, not even the food he ate. But his wisdom is what was cherished among the clan. He gestured for her to take a seat on the fur-covered bench. Alian, what can I teach you of the law? She sat reserved, hands folded in her lap, considering her words. After long moments, she stammered and blushed. I don't know how to say this. She was so embarrassed at her lack of words that she simply became silent and waited. Xavier looked puzzled. Alian, what is this about? Without raising her eyes to meet his, she asked, would the law punish someone for violating another? That would depend upon the violation. I can see, Alian, that you have something straightforward to ask, but you are not asking it. Why? She looked up then, meeting Xavier's questioning gaze. She sat as tall as she could before she pressed forward. I have heard. I mean, if a girl, not yet a woman, is taken against her will, but she wishes no one to know of this terrible thing, I want to know if a council must be called for the violators to be punished. Or could retribution be mandated by your authority alone? Xavier inhaled a long, deep breath, sucking air through his teeth. His brows furrowed. After a long silence, he spoke. This is a serious charge. We are a free people. When one of us takes another's rights away, it is a serious assault. Our women and children are sacred to us. You said violators. There was more than one. This is unacceptable. We will not allow this type of behavior. Alian said nothing as she watched his face contort with anger. He gathered his calm and continued, there are many levels to the law. Tell me more, Alian. Is this girl close to her first bleeding? Was the girl left with child? Of what station were her violators? His questions came at her so fast that she started to shake. How could she answer him without him knowing that she was speaking of Athene? She sat silently until he stopped questioning. She did not want to let him know how angry she felt. With child. I hadn't thought of that. Oh, gods! This was something totally unthinkable to her. When her voice would not betray her anger, she replied, "The girl is a druid in training. She is of high station. Her passage to adulthood will be celebrated this Samhain." She felt safe with the answers so far. There were 11 girls to become women this Samhain. all of them in training, and four of them of high station. He looked at her with soft brown eyes that seemed to pierce her resolve. The thought, "He knows it's Athene," spun around in her head. Her hands shook and she perspired. All she wanted was to run to what she knew best, her magic. It could take care of all this, and no one but she would ever have to know. "How many, Alion?" His voice was demanding and jerked her back from her thoughts of torture. She answered, "There were two, I mean three, I mean two." She stumbled over her answer, like falling over a log and tumbling downhill. "Which is it, two or three?" he asked sternly. "Two. The rape was committed by two boys. A third tried to stop them." She saw the light go off in his eyes at her words. "Alion, if the boys have not yet taken their rite of passage, the responsibility may fall on their parents. This may not always be the case. I must ask you to tell me who this is about, so that I may consider the laws." She looked at him in disbelief and stood to leave. "Never mind. I was just curious." He stood with her and kept his tone even. "Remember, harm none, Alion." She was shocked. How could he know what she was thinking? Her mouth dropped open. "What you do comes back to you many times over, my child. Be sure you consider all your options before making the choice of a free person." Alion stopped, and with the fiercest look that she could call upon, she said, almost whispering, "I am not a child. The reason I came to you was to consider my options. Thank you for your time, Xavier." She turned and walked out of the door. As she walked home, each step weighed heavier on her mind. Athene did not want anyone to know. Alion wanted revenge from the very core of her being. Xavier's words rang in her head like a threatening chant. "Remember to harm none. What you do comes back to you many times over." She knew this to be true, and it seemed her life to date had been a series of hard lessons. Some she had accepted, some she had ignored, willing them to be untrue. Her next step could not go against her training. She had to find another way to avenge her sister and save her honor. They could not get away with this. Alion suddenly turned and ran back to Xavier. She knocked loudly on his door. When he saw her standing there, he extended his hand, showing her to the fur-covered bench once more. "I am glad that you returned. I believe myself to be lax in my duties. I did not answer your question to my satisfaction or yours." He sat down across from her and continued, "When there is a rape between children, no matter the station of the girl, the boy must be punished. Having not taken the vows of our people, he will be cast out to live off the land with no help from his people. He will never truly be a man, and therefore he may not take a wife or own property. If the girl is of high station, shall we say a king's daughter?" His eyebrow went up, and Alion became sure he knew she was talking about Athene. "Then there is likely even a greater penalty." Her eyes widened. He went on, "If the boy is from a lower station than the girl, the consequences are even greater yet. The boy that helped, depending on his station, would also be considered for his actions. This will weigh on his reputation and that of his family's. If we're talking about adults, then the answer would be quite different. A rape of like-stationed adults can be constituted as a marriage in the eighth degree. There would be no punishment without an open accusation from the girl. You understand that, right? A council of nine would be called and judgment rendered on all parties involved." "She did nothing wrong," Alion blurted out, stronger and louder than she intended. "I believe you, Alion. Nevertheless, she would have to state her case. Retribution would come to her from the families of the boys if she had not instigated the rape." Her mind reeled in disbelief. Xavier could not truly mean Athene was at fault. She had tried to leave. She had screamed for help. It was two against one. How could she be at fault? Xavier could read Alion's thoughts, it seemed. Or maybe he had just seen the same in someone else's mind another time. Alian, I would need to speak with her, so I could help her determine the best course of action. I do not believe Athene would do anything wrong. She is an honest, free person.
Who said it was Athene? I never said that, Xavier. I need to think. Could we talk again later?
He nodded his head, not saying a word, and walked her to the door. Andrea's voice faltered as she counted Eve up. 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Wide awake. She sat up with the sun on her face and Andrea's arms around her shoulders. They hugged with such force that neither of them could breathe. She spoke so softly.
I didn't know you felt that way. Why didn't you tell me? I mean, why didn't Alian tell Athene?
Thank you for joining me for this episode of The Mark of a Druid. If you've reached this point in the recording, then congratulations, you're halfway, and from now on, it just gets better. Thanks for sticking around, and I hope you're enjoying the story. Leave your comments at patiobooks.com or itunes.com, themarkofadruid.com, and leave comments there as well. I'd like to thank you for joining me again. Take care.